The Will Cain Show podcast is presented by the Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all other purchases.
This is the Will Cain Podcast on ESPN Radio.
If you put all the quarterbacks together from the last two drafts, if you could pick between Kyler Murray and Joe Burrow, which would go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? That's coming up on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. The Last Dance, a documentary on the final season of the Chicago Bulls dynasty, and obviously featuring the greatest of all time, Michael Jordan, heavily, airs this weekend, begins its 10-series run on ESPN on Sunday night. Michael Jordan, who doesn't make appearances very often, went on ABC this morning with Robin Roberts, and he gave us a glimpse into the doc, into his mindset, and a fascinating interview. And here is some of that conversation.
And joining us now live from his home is Michael Jordan himself. As my mama used to say, it's good to lay my eyes on you, actually, to see you again after all this time. First, tell us, how's the family doing? How are you and your loved ones with all that's going on in the around the world these days? How are you guys doing?
Well, we're blessed, obviously. We get a chance to spend a lot of time together, so I'm quarantined down here in Florida with my wife and my two kids, and stay in contact with my other three kids via the phone, but my family's doing well. Mom, brothers, sisters, everybody's doing well. So we're very blessed, especially with what's going on in the world. And look, our hearts and our prayers go out to all the tragedies and the families that are enduring this unbelievable tragedy that's happening to America and to the world.
To the world. And thank you for that. And it's something that people feel, and they're looking for a distraction, if you will. And it's great that this series has been moved up. It was supposed to debut later, but people were just clamoring for something to give them inspiration and hope. And this docuseries really does this. It chronicles that final championship run, that final time that together with the Bulls. Michael, what do you remember most about that final year?
Well, it was a trying year. We all were trying to enjoy that year, knowing that it was coming to an end. I was hoping that, the beginning of the season, it basically started when Jerry Krause told Phil that, he can go 82-0 and he would never get the chance to come back. And, knowing that I married myself to him, obviously, and if he wasn't going to be a coach, then, obviously I wasn't going to play. So Phil started off the year by saying this is the last dance, and we played it that way. So mentally it just kind of it tugged at you throughout the course of the year, but that this had to come to an end. But it also centered our focus to making sure we end it right. So, as sad as it sounded at the beginning of the year, we tried to rejoice and enjoy the year and finish it off the right way.
And it was quite a year, and the docuseries really profiles that and also goes back and sees, we see a young Michael Jordan. I love seeing your mother and seeing her doing so well. And when you were at North Carolina, like a typical college kid, you wrote her a letter and you were apologizing for the phone bill and asking her to send stamps. What did you learn about yourself during those college years, Michael, that stayed with you?
Well, I think that, it's a little different today. I mean, quite frankly, I had a phone bill that was probably $60 or a little less, and I only had $20 in my account. So, and the thing that, people are going to learn, and, my kids laugh about it when they see it, but we used postage stamps back in those days, where, I had to ask my mom to send me postage stamps. So, looking at the video, you're going to see a lot of things that people tendently forgot that life was this way. We didn't have Instagram, we didn't have Twitter. So, you had to live life as it came, and each day you preciously protected it, and you learn the education aspect, spending time with friends and family. It wasn't via the phone, it was actually in presence, and you wrote letters, So, to me, that's probably the most refreshing thing. That my mom, she kept all my letters. So, it's somewhat embarrassing, but yet it's refreshing that I took the time to write a letter and say, how much I love my mom, and you know, what I needed in college.
Yeah, it was very sweet to hear her read one of your letters like that. And in college, of course, the buzzer beater, 82, winning the national title. You said in the documentary that that was the moment that you went from Mike to Michael Jordan. What did you mean by that?
Well, up until that point, no one knew who I was. You know, I was a college kid other than, you know, the university. But outside the university, I was just known as Mike Jordan, you know. And when I hit that shot, my whole name became Michael Jordan. And I think it resonated with a lot of people outside of UNC. So, I mean, and I just started piling on that name itself from, you know, from the successes that I endured, you know, throughout the rest of my career. It wasn't about Michael. It wasn't about Mike. It was more about Michael then.
Yeah, it really was at that point, and people remember it so well, and they have that iconic shot of yours. We hear from your father as well, and boy, did he know his son. He said, if you want to get the best out of Michael Jordan, you tell him he can't do something. And we're going to show a clip that really personifies that, because it was your second year in the league, and you had an injury. You wanted to get back out on the court. Management had another idea about that and want people to take a look. This is what happened.
Michael asked him, well, if I play, what percentage is there that I'm going to get hurt again? Doctor said, yeah, 10%.
And I just lost it. I said, look, it's 10% chance, but it's 90% chance that I won't.
And then I chimed in to the doctors, what happens if the 10% kicks in? And they said, well, then his career would be over.
Well, everybody's just thinking about the negative. Well, I think the glass is half full. Everybody thinking it's half empty.
So I said to Michael, you're not understanding the risk-reward ratio. If you had a terrible headache and I gave you a bottle of pills and 9 of the pills would cure you and 1 of the pills would kill you, would you take a pill?
I look at him, I said, depends on how bad the headache is.
Okay, I gotta apologize to your mom that we did bleep it out, but sorry that we used that particular clip. I know Dolores is going like, really, really? But where did that perseverance, that drive come from, Michael? Where does it come from?
My parents. You know, my father worked at General Electric for years. He was trying to provide for his family. He moved all over, you know, southern North Carolina. My mom worked for a bank. She worked for Corning Glass. I mean, they were hardworking people. And they instill that in not just me, but my brothers and sisters. So, I mean, and I just lived vicariously through them and lived and learned it from them. And, you know, it just became a part of my nature, you know. And I always look at a negative and turn it into a positive. You know, fortunately, things like that happens in our life. And as I try to teach my kid, you know, just take that negative, learn from it, and turn it into a positive. And that all came from my parents.
Yeah, and oh, and you were keeping up with your brothers as well. We learned that in the docuseries that they, you were a tight-knit family, and they really, really, you guys pushed each other to be the very best, and that's certainly
what you are. Well, I wouldn't be here.
Are,
I wouldn't
very,
be here if it, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for my brother Larry. I mean, you know, Larry pushed me, and we used to fight after every game, but. Through that fight, you know, emerged someone like me, and, you know, he's right next to me. You know, he supports me, and he works for me and the team, and yeah, I would have never gotten this far without him.
Well, thank you. And thank you, Michael. I know you don't do this very often. It really means a lot to get up and to speak with us, and we really, really do appreciate it. And the series is just primo. I know that you're very proud of it. You take care, Michael.
Well, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Robin. Thanks for having me.
It's Michael Jordan this morning on Good Morning America with Robin Roberts. You can tune in to The Last Dance, a behind-the-scenes look at the 90s Chicago Bulls dynasty. The 10-part series begins Sunday, April 19th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time on ESPN. And you can listen to the wrap-up podcast hosted by Jalen Jacoby immediately following the broadcast, presented by State Farm. Available wherever you enjoy your broadcasts. I want to watch that. Watch it with my kids. This is about what a competitor is. This is about desire. But you know what it's also about is, why was this dynasty so destined to be torn down? Why was Phil Jackson out? What are the logistics behind that final season? I can see how that would inspire a team one more time to go back for that sixth, but it doesn't just give you the answer to why. Why has it got to be this way? If you could have any quarterback from the last two drafts, would you rather have Kyler Murray or Joe Burrow? If you laid them all out, everybody's in.
Daniel Jones, Jordan Love. How would you rank them? One through what? Mel Kiper went through the exercise. So will I. Plus, NFL over-unders. Coming up on The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like over-tipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
The Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We'll play a game of over-under a little bit later here on the show. But Mel Kiper was recently participating in a Q&A with fans over what's about to go down in the NFL draft 1 week from now. And one of the fans asked him a fascinating question. I tend to ask this question to most of our guys every year around the NFL draft because I like context. How good is Joe Burrow? How good is Tua Tagovailoa? And the only way to really answer that is, how would you compare him to the guys you've liked in the past? Because you know how we do this every year. This guy's the greatest thing ever. And then the next year, no, this guy's the greatest thing ever. It's like, well, every year we seem to have the greatest thing ever. And every year we seem to have franchise quarterbacks. And every year the bust rate stays at about 50% on quarterbacks. So something's off. So how do we compare year to year? Todd McShay does it every year where he'll put his total rankings. I think he has a point system up to a 100-point scale where he gives you exactly how high the prospect ranking is for various quarterbacks. But Kiper was asked specifically by a fan, what if you had last year and this year together? So you threw in Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins, and you put them side by side with Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, Tua Tagovailoa, and Jordan Love. How would you rank them? And that lets us know, I think, how excited Bengals fans should be about Joe Burrow. Or Dolphins fans should be about the prospect of Tua dropping to them at 5 or trading up to get Tua. How do they compare against last year's favorite quarterback? And although I indulge it and love it, and I think more is gained out of disagreement than agreement, we all agree that's true, right? Like, any conversation you're around people that you disagree with, you go away from that conversation more enriched than one when you're surrounded by people you agree with. Surely we agree, ironically, on that. I agree with Mel Kiper. I agree with his rankings between the last two drafts. It goes like this here. In reverse order of the top 7 quarterbacks over the last 2 years, the last prospect you would pick would be Jordan Love. Jordan Love is a boomer bust prospect. He's got potentially all the traits for a high ceiling, and people dare to use the name Mahomes from time to time on things like arm talent or playmaking ability. But his completion percentage, his interceptions at Utah State, it all would give you huge pause. And I think that puts him last in the rankings. I think then at 6 is, and I'm not doing this to upset him, I'm not doing this to tweak him, it would be Daniel Jones out of Duke. Now, we have to do this in a tricky way because we can't say, oh, after a year of seeing Daniel Jones or a year of seeing Kyler Murray, this is how I feel about him now. You have to think about who you thought of him at the time. And, of course, we could play cut after cut of Max Kellerman being mocked. I believe me laughing at Nuno and everybody going, oh, my God, Giants fans, they took Daniel Jones. Now, I love how Daniel Jones has responded. Love it. He doesn't listen. He moved on, he perseveres, and I would say Daniel Jones' rookie year has been pretty successful. But still, Daniel Jones would have been the 6th prospect ranked if you put these two together. At number 5 would be Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins, I think, is a guy who a year later, you might push him down, I'd put him below Daniel Jones. But I'm saying a year ago, when you were ranking these things at the same time, Haskins, it was a surprise when he dropped and Jones went high. It was a surprise that Haskins was picked up, what was it, 15th by the Redskins after Daniel Jones. So I think Haskins would have ranked 5th in these rankings. At number 4, Justin Herbert of Oregon. Again, I think he has some boom bust to him as well. He's got some mobility. He's got the ability to move around and make plays. He's apparently a really smart quarterback, if not somewhat introverted. Justin Herbert at number four. At number three, Tua Tagovailoa. I think Tua is special, and it's funny because this is why context is important. We're beginning to talk about Tua, and I've used this term. I've heard others talk about it as a generational talent. But generational isn't about the best this year or the best in even 2 years. Generational is about a 5, 6, 7, 8, I think in NFL terms, year span. So, for example, next year Trevor Lawrence comes out, and that is a generational level prospect. That is a guy you compare not to last year or the year before. You start comparing to Luck and Manning. And Elway. Is Tua that? I think Tua has traits and things to be excited about. Add in his injury stuff as well. And on our draft podcast with Matt Miller and Lance Zierlein, they said there is some concerns in NFL circles that he was surrounded by a lot of talent at Alabama. I think Tua comes in more realistically as the third best prospect. At number two, it's Kyler Murray. I think Kyler Murray was a little bit of a scheme fit thing a year ago. It's like, oh, he's number one, but because it's Cliff Kingsbury that has the pick. And I think that's fair because of his height and a lot of things that you would normally discount. And Murray's first year has looked great, so it's hard to discount that we know he looks like he's going to be pretty good. But Murray is a prospect. If you had them in front of you, if it was a blank slate and you had no professional career to compare, I think if all of us were sitting at the table and you could choose Tagovailoa, Murray, or Burrow, I think Murray would come in after the number one prospect of the last 2 years, Joe Burrow. I think he is number one of the last 2 years. And it's hard because he's a one-year experiment. He's only done it for 1 year, but what a year. What a year. We opened our show today asking, is it confidence or is it cockiness? Is it insecurity being faked or is it real? That calm, serene, I got this mentality in Joe Burrow. I think it is the serene confidence. I have my questions. I've wondered, is it more like Baker or is it more like Steve Young? I think it's more like Steve Young. Whatever it is, I do think Joe Burrow has it. I'm not saying generational prospect. I'm not saying, you know, the next best thing since Andrew Luck. But I do think in these two draft class, Joe Burrow is your number one prospect. There you go. Last two drafts. Burrow, Murray, Tua, Herbert, Haskins, Jones, then Love. Let's play a game of over-unders. Vegas has win totals out for several teams. Supreme Leader Nemo is going to give me three, and I'll tell you whether or not they win over or under this projected total. Take it away, Nemo.
It would have worked if I put my mic on, right?
Yeah, turn the mic on, bud.
It happens.
Always broadcasting genius.
Listen, you do the same thing, too, a few times in the show. Let's go back to some of the teams we talked about earlier with Andy Benoit. Raiders, 7.
Kind of the same division as the Chiefs. I already said I thought the Chargers would come in under 8.5. I think that the Broncos are not going to be very good. It's 7, Nuno, for the Raiders?
That is correct.
I'm going over. Going over for the Raiders. I think John Gruden's a good coach. I think he's building something. I think he was laughed at, and he's got a project on the road. Can't say 100% believe in Derek Carr, but they'll lose their games to the Chiefs. I think they can handle the Broncos and probably even the Chargers. I'm going to go. Gosh, they might have to also play their games. If their stadium doesn't get done because of the coronavirus pandemic. What did I read? They may have to play their games where?
Salt Lake City.
Yeah, Utah. That makes me question my immediate projection. I'm still going over on 7 wins. What's next?
The Los Angeles Rams, 8.5.
This is one of the most difficult because every team in that division you could say is capable of 8 wins. I think the Cardinals are going to be way better. Obviously the Niners. And when do you ever get to write off the Seahawks below 8 wins? 8.5. So do I think the Rams will win 9? I mean, they have clearly gotten worse this year in the offseason. I'm going under. I think I'm going under for the Rams. I think the Rams are roughly an 8-win team this coming year. How can I say they're going to be better than last year when their roster doesn't look any better than last year and they have limited draft capital to get better? If I'm wrong, it's because Sean McVay and Jared Goff proved us all wrong. But right now, I take the under. Is that it for now, Nemo?
Well, I was going to give you the Eagles at 9.5, so you can either do it now or save it for...
Over! All right, next, moving on.
All right, I'll tell you later if I think Pat's right. Over 9.5 for the Eagles, and Nuno will have for me a few other teams. But throughout this entire coronavirus pandemic and its effect on sports and the questions about when we get it back. There's also what it looks like and what happens. And I'm going to tell you something. Something happened yesterday and it's continuing to happen today in college sports that to me, I think means a lot. And it's a massive loss in this country in terms of our sports world. What happened yesterday at the University of Cincinnati that gives me very bad feelings about the future of college sports? That's next on the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like your mom, when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, Mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
So I guess there's a positive way and a negative way to look at this. College sports may not ever be the same. That's the negative way. College may never be the same. And that's the positive way to look at this. It's the Will Cain Show on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive's Home Quote Explorer gives you multiple quote options so you can pick what's right for you. See for yourself at progressive.com. Yesterday, it was announced that the University of Cincinnati would be cutting its men's soccer team program. Similarly, I heard a story today that St. Edward's University in Texas, a small school, was cutting men's tennis, men's golf, men's soccer, and other programs. Several colleges, I believe now all Division I schools on a petition together have gone and asked the NCAA to allow them to break the rules that require them to uphold to stay Division I. Rules like you have to have 16 sports, I believe. You have to be fielding teams in 16 different sports. You have to have 15,000 paid fans in the stands for any football game. You got to schedule enough games. They're asking for these rules to be set aside for the moment because colleges are suggesting they cannot support non-revenue sports. Now, we know college football is everything. That's what the budgets of college and university programs are built upon. To a lesser extent, basketball. And we know that if there is no college football this year, then we could be in for the destruction of college sports. But I don't know that even I or any of us thought this would be happening this soon. That we're already seeing budget cuts because the NCAA tournament and because the conference tournaments and basketball didn't happen, and now all of a sudden you can't have a men's tennis team? It's hard for me to understand because I think universities have been jacking up prices. I know universities have been jacking up prices for decades at rates that vastly outpace inflation. And yet, here is the AAC commissioner, Mike Oresko, on the Paul Feinbaum Show talking about what Cincinnati just chose to do.
This is something they might have done even without the pandemic. Their soccer program was a concern to them. They wanted to devote more resources to their other sports, to their student athletes. They felt that they could do more if they didn't have soccer.
Now, I don't know if I buy that. I don't know if I buy the idea that this was on the block anyway, especially when I see other programs out there already beginning to cut non-revenue generating sports like tennis. And I've had Mike Oresko on the show and I appreciate him and I think he's very good. But here's my thing, okay? And maybe I'm alone. You can tell me. 888-729-3776. I probably have a biased interest in this because I played a non-revenue generating Division I sport. I played water polo at Pepperdine and I loved it. Well, it was a lesson in humility because it wasn't very good. I only scored one goal, but still life lessons. I'm telling you, man, this is what collegiate sports is about. I love college football just like you. Like love. College football, college basketball. But we have to understand those are entertainment products. That's what they're for. But that's not what all college athletics are for. In fact, the vast majority of college athletics are for other things than revenue, other reasons than entertainment. There's a Vermont basketball team, which does very well, and I met those guys at one time. There's ice hockey. There's gymnastics. There's swimming. And I know it's like, oh, I don't care. I don't watch it. But you know what? The point of their existence is not for you and I to care. The point of their existence is not for you and I to watch. It's part of an educational curriculum, and it feeds so much into youth sports in this country. It feeds so much into the idea that if you excel at something, not just academics, you might get your college cost discounted. It feeds our Olympians. It feeds life lessons. And I just think there's way more, not just to the students themselves, the student athletes themselves, but to the collegiate environment, that there is an athletic component to the college education. One that I think is somewhat unique across the world. And most of the time that's lamented because we only look at it through the prism of pros. Like, oh, why go here when you can go pro? Why give it away when you can go pro? But what about those that aren't going to be pros? I just think it's a massive loss. It's a massive loss if college loses all of these other sports in the world. Now, let me tell you something. I have said here on the Will Cain Show, and I do believe this, I'm having trouble with the economics here. How is it that college tuition has outpaced the rate of inflation for decades, and they can yell poverty? How is it tuition prices can get jacked up at a rate? It's unsustainable, by the way. I believe 20 years from now, the cost of a college education is projected to be about $250,000 a year. You got a kid born today, you need $1 million to put him through 4 years of college. $1 million. That's unsustainable. It's stupid. It's flat stupid. And on top of that, demand for college attendance has gone up. So I sit and I go, how is it prices go up and demand goes up, but the margins are razor thin? And I've seen the studies that tuition only covers like half of what the college's costs are. Then they get government money. They have massive endowments, which are taking a hit right now when the market's getting crushed. But you want to know the truth? What's going on here is college has built a massive infrastructure, physical and personnel-wise, that is unsustainable. And that's where all this money is going. Have you been onto a D1 college in the last 10 years? They're Shangri-Las. They're country clubs. They're amazing facilities, and they just keep building. What more, there's professors that teach one class a week and make very nice coin to do so. There is so much cost built in to the whole concept of going to school for 4 years, which, let's be real, a lot of kids use it for reasons other than education. It's 4 years of, I'm going to grow up while I get drunk. Yeah, I get it. That's fun. But that's the point is, it's stupid to pay $250,000 a year for that. It's stupid. And that's the positive spin on this. I'd hate to see college athletics destroyed. But maybe we need to think about what education is like in this country in the future. Maybe we need to think about these massive oases in Lubbock, Texas, or Santa Barbara, California, and ask ourselves, are these little temples to the good life for 4 years that cost ridiculous amounts of money and are sold as exactly what you need to get a job in this country, the best way we can go about educating our kids? Because this whole thing right here, this pandemic, it's exposing what was real and what was fake. And I'm wondering if this was all worth it, what we've been doing with college over the last several decades. Greg McElroy, ESPN's football analyst, talked about no athletics, no football. Guess what happens?
Right now, look, football has to be played. Like, literally, it has to be played. So they are going to play it come hell or high water. It's going to happen. It's just we're not sure exactly when it's going to happen, because if it's not, college athletics will literally implode. Football programs make up and account for around 80% of the revenue of a vast majority of these schools. And television revenue is one thing, but for some of these schools in the Group of Five, the MAC and the Mountain West and the American Athletic Conference, even though they're essentially the Power Six, they rely so heavily on that gate revenue that it would be really, really difficult for them to put forth other programs and to support other varsity sports and to provide 200 scholarships annually.
Bad news, the concept of the student athlete may die. The good news, the absurdity of the cost and presentation of college may go with it. Coming up, Michael Jordan was the greatest of all time, but was he a bad teammate? It's next on the Will Cain Show.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Yesterday, I had longtime Detroit Piston and Chicago Bull John Sally on the show. I asked him if MJ was not just the GOAT, but was he a good teammate? There's a reason I asked that question. I'm going to play the sound for you in just a minute that questions Michael Jordan as a teammate. It's the Will Cain Show, reminding you that you can listen to the show on your smart speaker by asking it to play ESPN Radio, or you can ask for your local ESPN radio station by name. But Matt in Pennsylvania is on my phone line. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Will, what's going on? Hope you're doing well. I was wondering, do you think this is going to have a trickle-down effect in college to youth sports with parents telling their kids not to play tennis or field hockey or any sport like that because it has no chance to take them anywhere in the world now?
I think that's a great question, Matt. I'm going to answer a little bit of that now, and I think it's fascinating you asked me that because I want to talk about that in the third hour. What I want to talk about is, how about a lost generation of youth athletes? Like, I don't know about you who have kids out there or any of you that are young, but sports has totally changed. And kind of to your point, Matt, sports has become so transactional, so payoff oriented. Like, why are you doing this? What are you going to get out of it? What is the ultimate goal? Are you going to be a pro? Are you going to be a scholarship athlete in college, right? Trust me, I've got boys. They play soccer at a fairly high level, and everybody out there believes their kid's going somewhere with it, which is a totally unhealthy way to be thinking about sports. They should be thinking about this is teaching them to be better bankers or better whatever they're going to end up being in life. Win, lose, resilience, quit, teamwork, individualism. That's the point of sports for absolutely 99% of us. It's not for the payoff. But part of that whole payoff mechanism is, boy, you better not miss a week of practice, much less the travel team schedule this weekend. And right now, they're missing 6 months of it. So what are we losing? Generation of athletes? Hell, what are we losing? A generation of education right now? At least a year's worth? Is everybody really capable of homeschooling their kids right now? I'm going to do that a little bit later. As to whether or not we lose the Olympic sports because potentially the payoff's not there. Yeah, I tell you, I played an Olympic sport my entire life. I was a swimmer and then I played water polo. And I was never as good as I thought I was. But no matter what, you do have the ultimate goal in mind. Every kid deludes himself, just like my 8-year-old says he's going to play in the English Premier League, right? And hopefully he's not listening because I don't want him to tell him it's a delusion. Keep gunning for the stars, boy. But for me, in an Olympic sport, it was two forms of payoff. I'm either going to go to the Olympics or I'm going to go do this in college. If you cut that out, do you cut out the ultimate goal for so many? I don't know. Then does participation go down? It shouldn't, but I'm sure it will have some effect on it. I mean, the rolling effects of this, the ripple effects are out of sight. Let's talk a little bit more about that here on the Will Cain Show. Michael Jordan and the documentary about the last year of the Chicago Bulls dynasty, The Last Dance, are taking center stage, as you should watch that on ESPN on Sunday night. With that, Jerry Stackhouse, Michael Jordan's one-time teammate with the Washington Wizards, was recently asked about what it's like to play with Michael. And I remember Stackhouse was with the Pistons, and he was already a fairly established player and good. And then he's traded to the Wizards, where Michael Jordan is there. And Stackhouse has had less than flattering things to say about playing with the GOAT. Listen.
And honestly, I wish I never played in Washington for a number of reasons. I mean, I felt like we were on our way in Detroit before I got traded there. But it was just, it was really challenging to be able to be in a situation with a idol who, at this particular point, you know, I felt like I was a better player and, you know, and things were still being run through Michael Jordan, you know, and I think, you know, Doug Collins, I love Doug, but I think he, you know, that was an opportunity for him to make up for some ill moments that they may have had back in Chicago. So pretty much everything that Michael wanted to do. I mean, we got off to a pretty good start. And then, you know, I don't think him liked the way the offense was running because it was running a little bit more through me. He wanted to get a little more isolations on the post, of course. So we had more isolations for him on the post, and it just kind of spiraled in a way to where I didn't enjoy that season at all. Kind of the picture that I had of my mind of, you know, Michael Jordan and the reverence that I had for him, I lost a little bit of it, you know, during the course of that year.
I don't think there's any doubt that Michael Jordan is the greatest of all time. I don't know if he's the greatest teammate of all time. I asked John Sally that yesterday, and he said, no, he is. He is. He was a great teammate. And he said, it's a little bit like being a father. You got to be tough in combination with being the guy with your arm around their neck. He talked about when he supposedly punched Steve Kerr and been hard on other people. But here's what I would say. It was probably hard for the thing that made Jordan great to be turned off when it was time to be more of a great teammate. That, give it to me. I'm taking over. Put it on my shoulders. I'm doing this. I'm the greatest. I'm the guy that the ball should run through. Really, really hard for the thing that made you, not just great, but the greatest of all time, a legend, to all of a sudden take a back seat, be turned off. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all that aged Jordan with the Wizards still thought, perhaps and probably incorrectly, that he should be the centerpiece of the offense instead of Stackhouse. I will say this. I'm going to give you two examples of guys, and it's not that they're goats. Well, they are in their respective positions and in the whole, you know, pantheon of basketball players, but it does show what was special about what Dirk Nowitzki and Tim Duncan did. They were dominant, and they were the best in the league at one time, both of them. Regular season MVPs and NBA champions. And late in their careers, they were willing to take a back seat for the team to continue to contribute and hopefully make the team better. It's a pretty special ability to be self-aware enough of where you are and sacrifice enough to continue to be a good teammate. It's hard. I imagine. And only harder for somebody who is the GOAT. We've talked about Joe Burrow, Tua, and the personality traits that we need to filter out. Let's ask one of our draft analysts, Jim Nagy, next on the Will Cain Show.
Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast. You can listen to the Will Cain Show live weekdays at 3 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on the ESPN app. The Will Cain Podcast.